It was no longer a phenomenon out there. It was something they could personally relate to. Pusateri formed a web policy board, an executive-level policy-making body with representatives from information technology, sales, the hotel brands, franchisees, legal, human resources, and corporate communications. Getting everyone, especially at the executive level, on board, organized, and thinking strategically about the Internet was our first important step, Pusateri explains. Later, Marriott also set up a web council, an informal working group of 25 to 30 people in charge of web content in various areas. The working group meets monthly to improve coordination and share best practices. Mike Pusateri and CIO Carl Wilson had established a connection from the beginning, and each made an effort to view the world from the other's perspective. When he first took the job, Pusateri, the business guy, had brought in a consultant weekly to educate him on technical issues. Wilson, the technology guy, recommended at the first policy board meeting that Marriott benchmark the business activities as well as the technical infrastructures of other leading companies on the web. At Marriott's request, its web developer, Fine.com, arranged for sessions at Boeing, which has probably the largest intranet in the United States, and Microsoft, which has one of the most active internet sites. The Marriott team, including executives, technical staff, and the corporate communications people, got a brain dump on how Boeing and Microsoft used the Internet. They discussed technology, migration strategies, internal coordination, and coordination with outside groups, such as Marriott's franchisees. Later, staff from Fine.com put Marriott through a highly facilitated 2-day executive discussion on the kinds of things each of Marriott's business units might do on the Internet. In the future, hotels will integrate the Internet into more than just the process of learning about travel and accommodations. They will also make Internet access far more of a feature of the rooms themselves. Most major hotels now make modem connections reasonably simple from the room, and they usually have business centers where guests can get more computer-related facilities. In the future, hotels catering to business travelers will make high-speed connections a standard in every room, and leading hotels will offer docking stations and large, easy-to-read screens so that business travelers can plug in their portable devices and be as productive on the road as they are in the office. How good is your website? Many companies are hiring outside firms to build their websites, and many business people may assume that they don't know enough about technology to judge whether they have a good site. Actually, it's easy to judge the quality of your site. Use it yourself. Is the experience easy? Is the information well organized? Can you quickly get answers to questions? Is it easy to gather goods into the electronic shopping cart? Or is it hard to search for items, and do you have to jump back and forth? Every company that touches a consumer electronically has to build products that work intuitively. You need to be sure to rigorously test anything you put on the web for customers. You get only one chance to make a good first impression. Putting web service in context. Having founded a business on the principle of touching the customer directly, Michael Dell saw the Internet as a natural extension of that philosophy. Marriott found the Internet to be a great way to extend its relationship with customers. Both companies used the new capabilities offered by the Internet to add unique value. The companies took similar steps to a successful deployment of Internet services. Internal coordination was first and foremost, corporate support for the Internet initiative, leadership from the business side, and the close cooperation of the technical departments. As a technology company, Dell needed less orchestration of its senior leadership, but like Marriott, it also formed a special Internet business unit. Marriott embraced the Internet with the help of high-level corporate sponsorship, a business evangelist, and a well-organized campaign to educate and involve its senior executives. Both companies were smart enough to recognize that commerce should be a combination of interaction over the Internet and personal contact. It's not a matter of either or. People think it's the cold screen versus the warm face-to-face, and assume that the person-to-person interaction will win. Because they don't see where the Internet belongs on the marketing, sales, service spectrum, they underestimate the Internet's capabilities. Smart companies will combine Internet services and personal contact in programs that give their customers the benefits of both kinds of interaction. You want to move pure transactions to the Internet. Use online communications for information sharing and routine communication, and reserve face-to-face interaction for the activities that add the most value. In addition to using the internet simply to make reservations or place product orders, customers find the internet the perfect medium for gathering information, assessing product value and price performance, checking order status, diagnosing and solving simple problems, and other relatively straightforward tasks. More and more, in this scenario, sales personnel become consultants. As internet technology matures, customers won't have to distinguish between web and phone support when they need help with difficult problems. As a customer browses a web page, he'll be able to just click on a button to get either web-based or phone-based support. For less critical business, he'll click on a button to send an email. For a question that needs an immediate answer, he'll click on a button to talk to a customer service agent. To better understand the problem, the agent on the other end will be able to see the same web page that the customer is looking at. At the same time, all of the customer's information will show up on the agent's screen. There are two ways to make a voice connection. The first is to use the same internet IP connection for both voice and data. With the IP connection, the agent can view the web page the customer is looking at, and the same connection carries the voice exchange with the customer. Although it's the simplest way to achieve simultaneous voice and web communications, the limited bandwidth that most consumers have today makes voice quality poor. As bandwidth improves, this approach will be used on every website. The second approach is for the software to check whether the customer's PC can establish a regular phone connection. When the customer clicks on the button to talk to an agent, the PC dials the phone number and connects with an agent over a regular voice line. The beauty of this method is that you can get high-quality voice today, but it is more complex to coordinate the voice connection with the web connection. Several companies are developing solutions based on one or the other or both of these technical approaches. One company, eFusion, has a push-to-talk button that companies can post on their websites. When a user clicks the button, he's connected directly to the company's call center, where both agent and caller can browse the same web content simultaneously while speaking over a voice connection. This system works over the single telephone installed in most residences. Users simply need a standard multimedia PC equipped with any internet-compliant phone software, such as Microsoft NetMeeting. Dell is adding push-to-talk capability to its intranet for employees to get technical support and plans to add it to the external website as well. Simultaneous voice and web communications will become common in many ordinary consumer transactions in the banking, mortgage, utility, and credit card fields as more and more people adopt the web lifestyle, a concept I describe in the next chapter. As high bandwidth connections become common, neither businesses nor customers will think of web support as distinct from other forms of support. Companies will need to be clever about their site design. Clicking a link to speak with someone won't be the first thing a customer does at most websites. Most companies will design sites so users are encouraged to look for answers for themselves and to click to speak to a service representative only when they really need to. The site might first guide a customer to a list of frequently asked questions or an automated help wizard that would guide them to a solution. Over a low-speed connection, a photo of the customer service representative could come up to make the conversation seem more personal. Over a high-speed connection, the customer could also have a direct video link to the representative. This integration of web and voice technology is going to be a huge change. Businesses already have the bandwidth today to do this internally, and it's only a matter of time before consumers have the capability too. As more companies move to e-commerce, how can anyone stay ahead? Companies that get there early, as Dell and Marriott did, benefit from the head start, from learning what works and what doesn't, and from name recognition. They benefit, too, from loyalty programs that tie customers to them. Dell uses electronic newsletters to stay in contact with customer segments, offering targeted news and promotions for subscribing customers. Marriott enables customers to redeem their Marriott Awards points via email. Perhaps the most important competitive advantage from their early starts, though, is the constant feedback both companies have gotten about their sites and their programs. This feedback helps them continually improve their processes. Their goal is to keep their web offerings several versions ahead of what a competitor will be capable of introducing. Michael Dell puts it well when he says that process innovation is now the fundamental source of competitive advantage. For both companies, a highly interactive and customized website has been key to acquiring more customers at lower cost and retaining them through higher satisfaction. Interactive customization, as exemplified by the Dell and Marriott websites, will play a bigger and bigger role in online sales. Where physical stores invest substantial amounts of money in bricks and mortar for location, 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 and try to pitch their wares to the average shopper. Online merchants can use digital information to customize their wares as they interact with each individual shopper. In Marriott's case, interactive customization draws more people to its hotel properties. In Dell's case, interactive customization helps to sell PCs. In both cases, the ability to touch their customers with individualized service is increasing their revenue. Business lessons. A successful website requires the creation of a new customer experience that takes advantage of the unique capabilities of the Internet. Success on the web requires high-level corporate understanding of the Internet's capabilities and support of early test and invest projects. The majority of your interactions with customers on the Internet will involve support rather than sales, and the word-of-mouth nature of the Internet means it's very costly if customers have a poor experience on your site. A good website can help turn salespeople into consultants. Diagnosing your digital nervous system. Do your digital systems enable you to provide a personalized experience for customers who come to your website? Do your digital systems allow you to trade physical assets for information? Will your web infrastructure enable you to easily incorporate video and phone support in the future? Chapter 7. Adopt the Web Lifestyle. Throughout the territories of every civilized nation, wherever human language is known or commerce has marts, the electric wires which web the world in a network of throbbing life utter their voices in all their varied tongues. A writer in 1878 describing the effects of the telegraph from the Victorian Internet. If you asked your friends why they use the phone to communicate with their friends or why they turn to the television for entertainment or breaking news, they'd look at you kind of funny. If you asked your friends whether they'd adopted the electricity lifestyle, they'd think you were downright nuts. People in developed countries take their electrical devices for granted. We just use them. But people who are now in their 50s can remember when just a few families had TVs. Our grandparents can remember when much of rural America was without electricity. A few people alive today were born before the widespread use of electricity in cities. The telegraph first connected the far corners of the globe with fast communications a century ago. It's taken more than 100 years for the electricity lifestyle to reshape civilization. When streets and houses were first wired, the only use for electricity was lighting. Electricity's potential to reshape everyone's lifestyle was unforeseen. Electric light was safer, cleaner, brighter, and more flexible than natural gas, kerosene, or candles. Once the infrastructure was in place, though, innovative new products were created that took advantage of electricity. Electric refrigerators, phonographs, and air conditioners were applications of the new technology to existing needs. The most revolutionary applications of electricity were the phone, the radio, and the television. All of these new devices reshaped our economies and our lifestyles. People hadn't dreamed of these devices before the infrastructure was available. Because the Internet is a worldwide communications infrastructure that depends on electricity, you could say that its popular acceptance is an extension of the electricity lifestyle. But the Internet is enabling a new way of life that I call the web lifestyle. The web lifestyle, like the electricity lifestyle, will be characterized by rapid innovations in applications. Because the infrastructure for high-speed connectivity has reached critical mass, it is giving rise to new software and hardware that will reshape people's lives. Intelligent devices, such as the PC, are becoming more powerful and less expensive. Since they are programmable, they can be used for many different applications. Within a decade, most Americans and many other people around the world will be living the web lifestyle. It will be a reflex for these people to turn to the web to get news, to learn, to be entertained, and to communicate. It will be just as natural as picking up the phone to talk to somebody, or ordering something from a catalog is today. The web will be used to pay your bills, manage your finances, communicate with your doctor, and conduct any business. Just as naturally, you'll carry one or more small devices using a wireless connection to stay constantly in touch and conduct business wherever you are. For a lot of people, the web lifestyle is well on its way today. By 1998, more than 40 million Americans were using the web regularly, up from 22 million the year before. By 1998, the average user accessed the web 8 to 9 separate days a month, spending a total of about 3.5 hours a month online. It's exciting to see that people living the web lifestyle are using the internet to learn and buy in new ways. When the Sojourner landed on Mars in the summer of 1997, NASA's website drew 47 million hits in 4 days from people seeking more detail than they could get from the traditional news media. Whatever you think of the Star Report on President Clinton, the internet was the only feasible medium for disseminating the 445-page document quickly. 6 to 9 million people viewed it the first weekend after its release. Businesses are providing a wide variety of information and services, whether it's real-time stock quotes, sports scores, or city guides. You can buy almost anything on the web, from impressionist paintings to metal cartoon superhero school lunchboxes, which have become collectibles. The web is an ideal vehicle for community building, too. There are sites for tracking missing children and helping people adopt pets, and for every activity imaginable. Sites that involve citizens are getting excellent traffic flow. One website shows all the industrial polluters in the United States, offering maps and the ability to search by company name or locale. It drew 300,000 users in the first 5 hours it was up, almost all by word of mouth. A cultural change as substantial as a move to the web lifestyle will be generational to some degree. It's the kids growing up with the new technology and taking it as a given who will show us the full potential. On most U.S. college campuses, the critical mass for a web-ready culture already exists. Personal computer use, high-speed networking, and online communication are widespread. Universities are dispensing with paper forms and registering students for classes over the web. Students can look at their grades and even turn in their homework over the web. Teachers hold online discussion groups. Students email friends and family as naturally as they call them. Students are the ultimate knowledge workers. Their job is to learn and explore and find unexpected relationships between things. The specifics of the academic courses don't matter as much as learning to think and analyze. Students are developing internet skills that will help them learn throughout their lives. For business, there is an opportunity to learn from the way students use the internet today to organize and manage their lives. Their approach is a guide to how the general population will use the internet 10 years from now. The adoption of technology for the web lifestyle is happening faster than the adoption of electricity, cars, TV, and radio. Usage spreads through the workplace exposure to PCs and through friends and relatives. Many people who use PCs at the office install them at home for work and then use them for far more. A lot of people over 55 years old, who wouldn't usually integrate new technology in their lifestyle, are motivated to use the internet as a way to stay in touch with their friends and families. A friend of mine recently received email from two distantly related women in their 70s. They were into the internet to research genealogy. Radical new uses of the internet that none of us can accurately predict today will reshape the world as fundamentally in the 21st century as the unexpected uses of electricity did in the 20th, and faster. As consumers rapidly move online, one of the most fundamental shifts will be the degree to which consumers will manage their finances, including banking, mortgage, utilities, and credit cards, online. In 1998, only about 1 million of the 15 billion total bills in the United States were paid electronically. Little online customer service was available. In fact, though consumers can pay some bills online, in almost every case they still receive them on paper. When consumers are able to pay online, the U.S. Commerce Department estimates, processing costs will drop more than $20 billion annually. Within a couple of years, electronic bill payment will be offered by most companies, and financial institutions will maintain a single site where customers can go to pay their monthly bills. From your banking web page, you'll click on the icon for your credit card company or department store or utility and go directly to that company's site for your account information. You'll have more information about your bills online than you have on paper today. You'll be able to drill into account and payment history. Rather than having to write a separate letter, you'll click on an email button to ask a question about a bill. Merchants will use your online bill review page to promote additional products and services. Today you have to figure out on paper what bills you want to pay and how much you want to pay on each. In the future, software will enable you to calculate online the effect of various payments on your bank balance. You'll make your payment exactly when it's due, and bill payment systems will integrate with financial management software. Bringing about the web lifestyle. By late 1998, about half of all American households had PCs, and about half of those PCs were connected to the web. The percentages are lower in most other countries. Reducing the cost of high-speed communications so people can remain constantly connected and making the software simpler to use are critical to making the web lifestyle commonplace. I believe that by the year 2001, more than 60% of U.S. households will have PCs and that 85% of those homes will have Internet access. For other countries to reach these levels of use, they will have to make large investments in communications infrastructure. People underestimate the degree to which the hardware and software will improve. Take just one aspect, screen technology. I do my electronic mail on a 20-inch LCD, liquid crystal display, monitor. It's not available at a reasonable price yet, but in 2 or 3 years it will be. In 5 years, a 40-inch LCD with much higher resolution will be affordable. Screen quality will have a profound effect on how much people will read on the screen instead of on paper. The cost of a personal computer is also coming down. Historically, innovation has focused on creating a more powerful PC at a given price point. Now, innovation is reducing price as well. Capable PCs cost well under $1,000 today, and lower price points are expanding the market. Looking at a 10-year time frame, you're going to have PCs that cost the same as a typical TV set. In fact, the distinction between a TV set and a PC will be fuzzy, because even set-top boxes that connect TVs to the cable system will have a processor more powerful than the one we have today in the most expensive PC. Smaller personal companions will become prevalent. These will include the handheld PCs on the market today, new computer tablets, and wallet-size PCs that will carry identification and enable electronic transactions. The phone, radio, and TV will pick up new capabilities as they go digital. Some devices will be carried on your person. Some will be in different rooms in your house. Others will become standard in vehicles. Any of them will enable you to access such information as email and voicemail, stock reports or other news, the latest weather, and the status of your airplane flight. These devices will connect through wires or through wireless technologies, such as infrared and radio frequencies. Though the devices will function independently, they will synchronize data among themselves automatically. Changing home and TV experience. These devices will become part of the fabric of daily activities. When you leave the office for the day, your personal digital companion will download your email, which might include a grocery list from your spouse. At the store, you can download a new recipe from a kiosk, which adds to your grocery list all the items you would need to use the recipe. Your digital companion is smart enough to update all the devices that need to know your home or work schedule, but updates only the kitchen device with the recipe. From a computer tablet in the kitchen or den, you check the house's status. The furnace icon may be blinking because the filter needs to be changed. A video of the front door area shows who stopped by while no one was home. Digital security cameras connected to a network are becoming cheaper and will be common to reduce theft. Some daycare centers and schools are providing password-protected access to cameras to enable parents to check on their kids while they're at school. While dinner is cooking, you go to a private website for your extended family and find out that everyone has been in the chat room discussing what activities to do at an upcoming family reunion. They used electronic polling to settle on any of a half dozen possible events, and they've asked you to go ahead and schedule as many of them as you can. A software agent, which knows you have already booked travel to the location, suggests several nearby activities, including rafting, which was on your family's list. The agent also alerts you to a new, lower airfare to your destination. You digitally book the rafting and the lower fares. When you're ready to watch TV, you might scroll through the electronic programming guide on screen or use another software agent to see what's on. You've told the agent your viewing preferences, and it's tracked your actual viewing patterns, so it recommends several shows among the many hundreds available on digital TV. You choose to see a rodeo. While watching, you use the interactive menu to enter a contest and to judge the bull riding events. Viewer scores will count for half the final results. A commercial comes on advertising a minivan. Most viewers see an ad for pickup trucks, but demographic data that you voluntarily provided through your TV indicates that you're a better candidate for a family hauling vehicle. Using the interactive TV's menu, you also discover that there's a rodeo in the town where you're having the reunion. Your family wanted at least one more unusual outdoor activity, so you booked the rodeo, too. The activity is automatically added to the reunion schedule, which you now email to the rest of the family. Development of intelligent, interactive TV will come as television moves from analog transmission, where video and audio are carried using signal strength, to digital transmission, where video and audio are carried as digital bits. Digital transmission is less subject to distortion, is easier to correct for errors, and provides for higher quality video and sound. Better video and sound have been the main focus for broadcast networks with digital TV in the form of high-definition television, HDTV. As of late 1998, 41 U.S. stations had begun digital broadcasting for HDTV. Digital TV can do a lot more than improve broadcast quality, though. Satellite and cable companies are already using digital TV to deliver more channels. Over time, the biggest impact of digital TV will be the ability to integrate other digital data, providing interactivity, smart agents, targeted advertising and sales offers, and access to the web. Broadcasters will provide enhanced content, such as links to relevant websites, or entirely new web content that complements the broadcast, or download music or software for a fee to a user's DVD. Many of the new features require a two-way link, which is easy for new cable TV systems. Older cable systems have to be upgraded. Satellite and over-the-air TV will use phone lines or wireless communication synchronized with their broadcast to achieve interactivity. New technology will simplify the TV interface. Trying to record one or more programs at certain times and days remains frustratingly complex with analog systems. Recording a show on one channel while you watch a different show on another may require you to swap the cables among your TV, video, and set-top box. In the future, taping a show will be as simple as telling the TV the name of the show and the episode. Using speech to interact with the TV, PC, or other personal companions will be common within 10 years. The technology will combine speech recognition and natural language understanding so that the computer can determine your intent. Speech synthesis will improve dramatically from the robot-sounding voices you hear today. Your TV and PC will include a camera so they can recognize gestures and facial expressions. They will be able to tell whether you're talking to the device or someone else, or another device, and determine your emotional reaction. If you appear confused, the TV or PC will offer interactive help on the current topic or issue. It will also adapt to your behavior, whether that has to do with the programming you like on your TV or the typical pattern of activities on your PC. Computers that see, listen, and learn will extend digital technology into many new areas where the keyboard or mouse interface makes interaction impractical. The rollout of digital television will occur in three phases. The build-out of the infrastructure, which will take several more years, the integration of the new capabilities into broadcast, satellite, and cable systems, and finally, innovation on the new infrastructure. A lot of exploration and a lot of customer feedback will be required before the best uses of the new infrastructure become clear. Major networks such as NBC, MSNBC, CNN, and MTV, and some local broadcasters are already experimenting with using interactive content to supplement their regular programming. During the Emmy Awards in September of 1998, consumers could access additional information on award categories and nominees, experience live, on-scene video and audio, catch behind-the-scenes interviews, and participate in trivia quizzes, interactive fan balloting, and chat rooms. Many technical issues need to be resolved to ensure a simple and totally digital television experience for viewers. There are too many incompatible encryption standards for different phases of digital transmissions. One for the airwaves, one for cable systems, and one for the link between the set-top boxes and the TV itself. And while PC vendors have agreed on the data formats for devices connected through a new standard called the Universal Serial Bus, USB, that will connect many of the new digital devices, makers of consumer electronic devices have many different approaches. Bandwidth, the information-carrying capacity of a digital communication system, remains the biggest obstacle to widespread adoption of the web lifestyle in all countries. Bandwidth is also the biggest cost. In developed nations, businesses can generally afford the bandwidth they need to work digitally because lots of telecommunications companies are wiring business districts with fiber optic cable. But getting affordable wiring into homes, schools, and libraries, which is critical to achieving a fully connected society, will take much longer. Unquestionably, we won't see the full benefits of a web lifestyle until high-bandwidth systems are in place. Some governments, such as Singapore's, have committed to installing high-bandwidth systems as a matter of social policy. Governments in other countries, such as the United States, the United Kingdom, and Australia, can rely on competition between cable and phone companies to make sure that the infrastructure is built. Other countries are starting from scratch. The most important step for a country to achieve a high bandwidth infrastructure is to encourage competition in telecommunications. Because it's relatively inexpensive to add more cabling between major geographies around the world, bandwidth inside the Internet backbone continues to grow rapidly and will not be a limiting factor. The hard and expensive part is what's called the problem of the last mile. Getting increased bandwidth from the end of the big pipe of major transmission services to individual homes. Technology advances in the next 10 years will help make this part less expensive. A technology called DSL, Digital Subscriber Line, which uses digital signals instead of traditional analog signals over regular phone lines, is already giving us more bandwidth from twisted pair copper telephone wire. Cable modems are becoming more popular. Outside of a densely populated central business district, the laying of new fiber optic cable is not cost-effective. Because the expense is primarily labor, there probably won't be any substantial reduction in price over time. For this reason, countries in both the developed and the developing world are awaiting satellite communication systems. 5 narrowband satellite systems, such as Iridium's, are being constructed to provide voice communications. Another system, proposed by Alcatel, would provide regional broadband, high data rate coverage. A third approach, by Teledesic, would provide broadband communications globally, an Internet in the sky. Operating only about 500 miles up, these low-Earth orbit systems will provide the low latency that is essential for interactive applications on the Internet. Geostationary communication satellites 22,000 miles in space suffer half-second time delays every time data goes up and back. Because low-orbiting satellites are not stationary, though, a large constellation is required to ensure that at least one satellite is always in range of a receiver on the ground. As with any pioneering concept, the people who are building, launching, and operating these satellite systems have a lot of work to do. They have to raise more capital, finish proving the technology, and establish the right distribution systems. But once in place, these systems will use small antennas to provide service to places such as offices, factories, oil platforms, ships, schools, and homes. Because a satellite system that adequately covers all developed areas will also cover undeveloped areas, extra capacity will be available for developing countries. The benefits of the information age can be extended to areas of the world in which no one would build this capacity for its own sake. Whether this locale is a suburb or small town in the industrial world, or a remote region of an agricultural land, nonprofit uses will likely be available at low cost. Scientists all over the world are exploring new technologies, and old ones. Recently, a British engineer developed a way to send high-speed voice and data signals on household electrical current, raising the possibility that Internet service could one day ride into homes and business over our existing infrastructure of electrical wires. Technologies such as DSL, cable modem, low-orbit satellites, and power line transmission are exciting because they don't require us to dig up and replace the existing last mile of copper line that already connects most households in the developed world. Getting the web infrastructure in place worldwide is a daunting task, but the advances on many fronts make it likely that the speed of improvement will surprise everyone in the next decade. Removing work and life limitations. The social implications of the web lifestyle and work style are enormous. A lot of people fear that computers and the Internet will depersonalize experience, creating a world that's less warm and fuzzy. Some people were initially afraid that the telephone would reduce face-to-face contact, too. Just as two people might call each other when they would have talked face-to-face without the phone, two people sitting close to each other might email each other when they would have met face-to-face without email. Any medium can be misused. The evolution of personal and professional manners for the web will continue. It's easy to speculate that the web lifestyle, with everyone off in his or her own little world, will cause society to fly apart. I believe the opposite is actually true. Just as the phone and email have increased contact between people living in different communities and between people on the go, the PC and the Internet give us another way to communicate. They don't take any away. In reality, the ability to use the Internet to move or redefine boundaries in our communities is strengthening personal and cultural connections. The city of Amsterdam, the Netherlands, facilitates Internet discussions about issues such as city planning, safety, and drugs. Citizens can connect to the police via email. An Egyptian site for children, called the Little Horus website, contains more than 300 pages of information and illustrations covering Egypt's 7,000 years of civilization. It also gives snapshots of Egypt today, including its economic, cultural, and social life. The tour section includes tips on popular destinations for children. The web lifestyle is about broadening horizons, not narrowing them. With all this content available, screening becomes an issue, especially when children have access. The Internet reaches a global audience, yet definitions of objectionable content vary from country to country. At the same time, authors of illegal content are often hard to trace. In this environment, censorship is difficult. In light of the distinctive characteristics of the Internet, the most effective approach to content will combine the blocking of sites on a country-by-country basis with industry self-regulation and content screening software. Content ratings and filtering technologies, such as the Platform for Internet Content Selection, PIX, enable users to control the content they and their families can access. Community building is going to be one of the biggest growth areas in the next few years on the web. The web dramatically increases the number of communities you can bond to. In the past, you might have had time to be a part of your neighborhood community and one or two social organizations you took the trouble to join. In the web lifestyle, you are limited only by your interests. One of the most powerful socializing aspects of the web is its ability to connect groups of like-minded people, independent of geography or time zones. If you want to get together a group of avid bridge players, or talk issues with people who share your political views, or stay in touch with your ethnic group scattered all over the world, the web makes it easy to do. If you want to keep up with the goings-on in your hometown, the web can help. I've discovered that New Yorkers transplanted to the West Coast have an insatiable appetite for news from the Big Apple, and many of them satisfy that desire through the web. A website such as Third Age, which offers an electronic community space for seniors, illustrates the power of electronic community building. The site provides advice on family, health, technology, warnings about scams targeting seniors, and discussion groups on topical issues. The web lets you join communities across the globe and provides the opportunity to strengthen connections in your own backyard. In Singapore, population density and the government's focus on infrastructure have helped the city-state become perhaps the world leader in the deployment of fiber optic cable and interactive applications built on top of it. Broadband cable is a required utility like water, gas, electricity, and telephone service. Virtually all public housing has been connected with cable, and Singapore officials estimate that more than 50% of all homes have PCs. Not all communities getting wired are urban centers. Parthenay, France, a town of 12,000 people, is one of four communities in three countries that have gone online as part of the European Imagine project, supported by the European Union and a partnership of cities and industry. Citizens are using the web in their day-to-day lives for such things as ordering bulk groceries. French families still come down to the market every Saturday, but now they bring a small basket and buy only specialty items, making the excursion more of a social activity. An online philosopher's cafe encourages thoughtful discussion, and every Wednesday, cattle breeders have chat sessions to discuss issues of common concern. The goal of the 3-year Imagine project is to pass on an integrated solution to another 30 European communities for deployment. Various American towns are also hooking up. Coldwater, Michigan, in the American Midwest, has all 4,000 households on a high-speed cable system that provides cable TV, internet access, dial tone, and access to a community network. One family that had an interest in billiards built a website on the topic and sold $45,000 worth of billiard cues in the first 60 days. Lusk, Wyoming, a community of 1,500 where cows outnumber people 100-1, is wired with fiber optic cable. The people use PC technology for everything from managing cattle herds and studying the prairie grass environment to operating a beeswax hand cream business. A 15-year-old boy, a certified PC software engineer, acts as the town's technical consultant. The people of Lusk have embraced the web lifestyle to keep their ranching lifestyle viable and to connect their kids, so they don't have to leave in order to be part of the outside world. How are we going to find the time to live a web lifestyle and join more communities? The web will make a lot of things more efficient than they used to be. You can quickly find out how much your used car is worth, plan a trip, or find out anything you need to know when you want to make a major purchase. These activities are easy on the web today, and people will probably trade some of the time they now spend reading the paper or watching TV for the information or entertainment they'll find on the web. A British study in 1998 showed that about 25% of the British adults who used the Internet watched less television than they did before. Moving past old limits. Much of this book is about having all the information we want at our fingertips. Most people want to find the best price for a product or to be up to date on the important issues affecting their local or national communities. We have gotten by without this information because obtaining it has simply been too difficult. Without realizing it, we've been making do. The web lifestyle isn't about changing human nature or the fundamentals of how people live. Instead, the web lifestyle gives more people a chance to pursue their interests in a better way. For the consumer, the web lifestyle will have a positive impact. With the web as the world's biggest collection of shopping malls, consumers will have choices they didn't have before. They'll be able to find all the choices for goods they want, and in many cases, have them custom-made. They can have the final product delivered directly to their doors. The web produces a true consumer-centric world. Because consumers are demanding faster service, stronger relationships, and personalization, the web lifestyle will drive companies to develop a digital nervous system in order to keep pace with their markets. The web connects colleagues, friends, and families in new ways. Interest-based communities are forming with members from all over the world, and government has the potential to engage constituents more than ever before. By enabling people to shop, get news, meet each other, be entertained, and gossip in ways we're only now beginning to understand, the Internet is becoming the town square for the global village of tomorrow. With a web lifestyle, people can throw off many of the limitations that have been around for so long that we almost take them for granted. The web lifestyle is not about adding complexity to already busy lives. As people embrace the web lifestyle, they'll eventually take it for granted, just as they do the electricity lifestyle they live today. Business lessons. As PCs continue to drop in price and more households are connected, the web lifestyle will move most consumer transactions online. The web lifestyle changes the way businesses relate to customers and governments relate to citizens. Ultimately, the web lifestyle puts the consumer-citizen in charge of the relationship. The PC-TV convergence will create a new user experience and a new programming and advertising medium. Diagnosing your digital nervous system. Have you started interacting with your customers over the Internet? Have you considered what digital systems and tools you'll need when a majority of your customers prefer to conduct their business via the web instead of via traditional methods? Chapter 8. Change the boundaries of business. Connectivity enables you to seize more independence, while independence motivates you to get ever more connected. Stan Davis and Christopher Meyer, Blur, The Speed of Change in the Connected Economy. A flow of digital information changes the way people and organizations work and the way commerce is conducted across organizational boundaries. Internet technologies also will change the boundaries of organizations of all sizes. In changing the boundaries, the web work style of using digital tools and processes enables both organizations and individuals to redefine their roles. A corporation can use the Internet to work seamlessly with professionals such as lawyers and accountants who remain outside the corporate walls as consultants rather than as employees. An important re-engineering principle is that companies should focus on their core competencies and outsource everything else. The Internet allows a company to focus far more than in the past by changing which employees work within the walls and which work outside in an adjunct, consulting, or partnering role. Our core competencies at Microsoft are creating high-volume software products, working with other software companies, and providing customer service and support. We outsource a number of functions that don't fall into those categories, from help desk technical support for our employees to the physical production of our software packages. The web work style makes it possible to deal better with unpredictable demand. Because you have an intense need for a skill, and then you don't, for some areas you want flexible staffing to deal with peaks and valleys. The internet means that more companies can take a studio approach to running major parts of their businesses. Big Hollywood studios have full-time employees to handle finance, marketing and distribution, and other ongoing projects, but the creative side of the business, the full-time movie-making staff, isn't very big at all. When a movie concept is agreed upon, a director assembles a large group of people to create the film. When they're done, they disband. Everyone, from the director to the actors to the cinematographer to the key grip, goes on to other projects. Web technology makes it possible for many different kinds of projects to be structured as studio-type work. A project owner who wants to assemble a team can go online, describe the project, and find out who's available. People and organizations with the right skills can declare their interest, and the project owner can assemble a team quickly. People looking for work will find more opportunities for employment that meets their particular interests and requirements. If they have highly specialized skills, for example, or if they want to work only certain hours. The web can mediate the gathering of resources for a project a lot more efficiently than the "my people will call your people" approach can. Despite the emergence of new, flexible boundaries, big companies won't deconstruct themselves into per-project production companies. Companies need to excel in consistent, in-house execution of their core competencies. Big firms will continue to load balance that work as they always have. They'll just use technology to do it more efficiently. Every company will experiment to find its optimal size and organizational structure, though the dominant trend will be toward decreased overall size. For Microsoft, outsourcing has been a way to temper the expansion of our workforce and reduce our management overhead, but it hasn't stopped the growth of our workforce. The web work style, in which each contributor or company organizes itself optimally, enables us to extend our electronic web of partnerships and, I hope, keeps us from growing big in the wrong areas and becoming ineffective through too much overhead. Medium size and small companies can take advantage of the boundary-changing capabilities of the web to act much bigger than they are without adding employees or offices. A small company with the right expertise can bid on and spearhead a movie production, a construction project, or an advertising campaign. By assembling other companies and professionals quickly, it can act as a virtual large company to see the project to its profitable end. Because the team can be disbanded at the end of a project, the company can manage labor resources without the administrative overhead of a large full-time staff. Smaller companies can use the web to scale without permanent mass. Changing the work style for employees. Some employees in companies of any size are understandably nervous about the implications of the web work style. They assume that if their company chooses to restructure itself around web technologies, their jobs may disappear. Not so, unless restructuring is just a fancy term to mask layoffs. When a company downsizes, jobs are lost. When a company outsources, jobs move. The goal is not to eliminate work, but to move the responsibility to specialists outside. It's far more efficient for many companies, including Microsoft, to have an outside company handle installation and support for desktop machines, for example, because companies that specialize in such work can develop worldwide best practices, and because we can solicit competitive bids for the job. Employees who react to the prospect of outsourcing with fear are assuming that work belongs in the company and not out. As companies redefine themselves, some people will be dislocated. Despite the understandable anxiety, employees should also look at boundary changes as opportunities to define their jobs the way they want them, and to work for an organization of the size and personality they prefer. Or they can even use this sea change as a chance to start their own business. Not too long ago, one person who had been a freelance writer watched Microsoft outsource more and more writing assignments and recognized an opportunity. Today, this person has a tidy business, managing a dozen or so freelance writers, and Microsoft staff now spend their time specifying the work to be done instead of trying to manage the writing process for a bunch of different people. By and large, the changes in organizational structure will empower good employees. The web work style is particularly well suited to lawyers, accountants, engineers, and doctors, who usually work independently or in small teams. One of the reasons professionals have traditionally organized themselves into firms is to deal with fluctuations in customer demand. Now, instead of clustering to make sure that the workload gets distributed, they'll also have the choice of being solo professionals and using the internet to find customers. Laws or customs will hold back the rate of this change. Doctors and lawyers in most countries are limited in how they can solicit business. But even if they can't go directly to patients or clients, these solo practitioners can act as free agents to solicit work from established firms. With the web, becoming a free agent is no longer limited to athletes, artists, actors, and other big-name professional or creative types. It's now available to almost every kind of knowledge worker. Already, the free agent labor pool, including self-employed workers, independent contractors, and workers at temporary agencies, totals about 25 million Americans. One benefit of self-employment is diversification. You're less likely to be out of work if you have several employers than if you have one. Not everyone will choose the freelance approach. A lot of people want to work for bigger firms. They like the idea of belonging to one company, working on long-term projects, and having continuity in people and in the culture of a particular workplace. They invest in their career, and the company invests in them. A lot of the most interesting jobs, such as software design at my company, are core areas that won't be outsourced. Most companies, including Microsoft, work hard to make it attractive for good employees to stay long-term. A lot of developers and researchers joined Microsoft because they saw the chance to design software or develop technologies that will be used by millions of people. Like many artists, they want their work to reach the largest possible audience. People who want to work for a big company will, and people who don't want to will have interesting alternatives. A web work style also makes it easier for people who have good skill sets, but who can't or choose not to work full-time. Because they can find more work over the Internet and do more work remotely, such people will have new opportunities, and society will benefit by better utilizing this huge pool of talent. Many knowledge workers will live where they want to live and structure their work the way they want it, and still make major contributions to the businesses they work for or with. In the web work style, employees can push the freedom the web provides to its limits. When it comes to work style, the choice will be the workers. As a business manager, you need to take a hard look at your core competencies, revisit the areas of your company that aren't directly involved in those competencies, and consider whether web technologies can enable you to spin off those tasks. Let another company take over management responsibilities for that work, and use modern communications technology to work closely with the people, now partners instead of employees, doing the work. Also, consider the employees who have strong expertise but decide they don't want to work full-time. Better communication tools may allow you to utilize their skills on an ongoing basis. The competition to hire the best people will increase in the years ahead. Companies that give extra flexibility to their employees will have the edge in this key area. The web work style eases geographic constraints. Before the web, most workers were confined by geography. If you wanted to live in Greenwood, Arkansas, or Aiken, South Carolina, you couldn't easily work full-time or part-time for the best company in your field of expertise. If you wanted to work for a big firm, you were unlikely to live real close to the best fly-fishing country. Web communication is changing the requirement that you have to live close to work. Within a few years, telecommuting will not only become more common, but its essence will change. Today, most telecommuters do tasks that do not require a physical presence at the office, writing or analysis, for instance. Email and phone provide some interaction with colleagues or customers, but most of the remote work is solitary. In the future, video conferencing, electronic collaboration on documents, and the integration of the phone and PC will create a telepresence at the office that is impossible today for home workers. These technologies are already removing geography as a barrier to work. Several software companies in India are doing customer support for American companies. Taking advantage of the time zone differential, they work on problems while the United States is asleep and have solutions ready for customers first thing the next morning, U.S. time. Not too long ago, two Danish computer science students working at Microsoft's Redmond, Washington campus became the first people in history to take and pass transatlantic oral exams over the Internet to complete their bachelor's degrees. By using a PC to eliminate the need to be physically present with their exam professor in Denmark, the students could stay in the United States longer and obtain more work-related training. NetMeeting, the PC communication technology used by the students, has broad applicability for telecommuting. Pythia, a small software company in Indiana that makes software for legislative bodies, uses NetMeeting as part of its software development. Pythia has most of its customers and its software support engineers in the United States, but its chief developers live in Greece. The developers and U.S. employees use internet telephony to discuss product requirements. Each side can take control of the PC screen to use it as a whiteboard on which to draw flowcharts and even write code. The web will increasingly equalize opportunities for skilled people around the world. If you had to guess someone's income today and were limited to a single polite question, a good one would be, "What country do you live in?" The reason is the huge disparity in average wages from country to country. In 20 years, if you want to guess someone's salary, the most telling question will be, "What's your education?" Business lessons. The web redefines the boundaries between organizations and between people and organizations. It allows a company to structure itself to be more efficient. The web work style makes it possible for employees to telecommute and to collaborate with employees and partners at other locations. The web enables big companies to appear to be smaller and more flexible, and smaller companies to become effectively much bigger than they are. Diagnosing your digital nervous system. Do your digital systems allow you to work seamlessly with professionals such as lawyers and accountants who are outside the corporate walls? Do your digital systems help you focus on your core competencies and outsource everything else? Do your digital systems help you load balance work more efficiently? Chapter 9. Getting to Market First. You either move with speed or die. It's the converse of speed kills. Richard McGinn, Chairman and CEO of Lucent Technologies. Customers want high-quality products at low prices, and they want them now. Every business, whether it's a producer of products and services or a supplier to that producer, has to deal with a shrinking time to market while keeping quality high and price low. Information technology has become a major contributor to the faster turnaround, the higher quality, and the low inflation that have characterized business in the last decade. Few industries illustrate the twin pressures of collapsing time and improving quality better than the automobile industry. Japanese auto designs in the 1980s appeared fresher and their quality improvements more frequent than in American cars because Japanese automakers could take a car from concept to mass production in 3 years. American automakers typically took 4 to 6 years, and their costs were higher. American companies responded by breaking down the organizational barriers that had cut off design, manufacturing, and sales divisions from one another, and by improving communications with their external partners. Designers, engineers, suppliers, and manufacturing and assembly personnel began to work in tight teams that communicated electronically, cutting the time from product design to sales room floor by more than half. Other process improvements in the auto industry have been significantly augmented by technology, including the computer-aided design, CAD, of cars. The 3D modeling capabilities of CAD applications enable engineers to design a vehicle without having to build a prototype by hand. The designers can see whether parts will fit together and can change part designs without building special tooling. The use of digital information flow to improve the efficiency in the supply system is covered in Chapter 12, but it's worth noting that electronic links between car manufacturers and suppliers have already reduced the error rate in parts deliveries by 72% and saved up to 8 hours per week per car in labor costs. Consumers have benefited from better vehicles produced more quickly. Ford's strides in production are representative of the entire auto industry. In 1990, the company took 5+ years to take a car from concept to customer, and it experienced 150 defects for every 100 cars, or 1.5 defects per car. By 1998, Ford had cut its cycle time by more than half to less than 24 months. Its defects rate had gone down from 150 to 81 defects per 100 cars. Today, the defect rate of most manufacturers is less than 1 per car. To further shorten cycle times, carmakers are also planning to use the Internet so that engineers in one time zone, in India and Asia, for instance, can work on problems overnight and get answers back to their counterparts across the world by the next business day. Keeping the pace in the face of rising complexity. In some industries, the issue is not so much faster time to market as it is maintaining time to market in the face of astronomically rising complexity. Intel, for instance, has consistently had a 90-day production cycle for its chips, which power most PCs. Intel expects to maintain this 90-day production rate despite the increasing complexity of the microprocessor. The number of transistors in the chip has increased from 29,000 in the 8086 in 1978 to 7.5 million in the Pentium in 1998, and the microprocessor's capability has grown 10,000-fold over the same 20 years. By 2011, Intel expects to deliver chips that have 1 billion transistors. This exponential improvement stems from Moore's Law, which says that the power of microchips doubles every 18 to 24 months. To put Moore's Law in perspective, if products such as cars and cereal followed the same trend as the PC, a mid-size car would cost $27, and a box of cereal would cost a penny. Intel uses a variety of management, production, and digital techniques to maintain efficiency while cramming more and more transistors onto a chip the size of a thumbnail. In the 1970s, Intel's lab technicians wore smocks and used tweezers to move the silicon wafers from one process step to the next. Today, Intel's technicians work in an environment 100 times cleaner than the best medical operating theater. They wear the bunny suits you might have seen in Intel's TV ads. The real suits are white. They turn bright metallic colors only, Intel says, when put close to a marketing person. Now, robots move large numbers of wafers between the processing steps. Each generation of chips requires new, high-volume factories that cost more than $1 billion each. In 1998, Intel introduced an innovative copy-exactly strategy to maintain a uniform level of efficiency and quality across its chip factories. To avoid the introduction of hundreds of varying trial-and-error processes as a new chip moves from development to different manufacturing plants, Intel involves the managers of the manufacturing facilities early on at the development plant, making sure that the production process is fine-tuned there for reliability and high volumes. The perfected process is copied exactly to all of the plants, enabling Intel to bring new factories online quickly with high-volume best practices already in place. To reduce the trial-and-error processes and its design work, Intel's Albert Yu, Senior Vice President of the Microprocessor Products Group, also launched a program called Development 2000, or D2000, to ensure that every design engineer got the benefit of best practices from across the organization. By studying its design processes for the Pentium and Pentium Pro chips, Intel discovered